Episode number 337, How to Transform Your Online Preaching with David Morrow. Let's do it.
This is the definitive podcast for helping you plan, create, and execute dynamic worship experiences at your church. Useful, practical content in the areas of production, worship, communications, first impressions, and more. This is Making Sunday Happen.
Hey guys, this week's episode of the podcast is brought to you by the D6 Conference. The D6 team have become fast friends of mine, and their conference this year is for your entire family ministry team. It's going to be in Orlando, Florida on April 20th through 22nd. I'll be there, and I hope to see you there too. I'll tell you more about it in just a minute. I am really pumped about this week's episode of the podcast. I attended a conference at Windshape Retreat, which is the Chick-fil-A Retreat Center. I was invited by some great friends to join the Fatherhood Commission to talk about fatherhood and small business. And I met a new friend there by the name of David Morrow. David is the author of Why Men Hate Going to Church and Drowning in Screen Time. Great books that we'll hit on briefly today. But I'd love to have David back to talk about them more. You need to grab these books. Again, Why Men Hate Going to Church is a fantastic read. Very good insight as to the men that attend your worship experiences and why they hate it or why they love it. David dives into a lot of things on how to reach men with your worship experience. Great book. Also, Drowning in Screen Time is his latest to check out. Great books, both of them. David has had a long career in television and media as a producer and many other roles. Today, we're going to be talking about how to transform your online preaching. Now, I'm not a senior pastor. I don't have the gift of preaching, but David and I will walk through some practical tips for how to get attention online and how to preach effectively to the masses. Hopefully, we'll give you some practical tips that you can try at your church. So David Morrow is on the way right after this. Hey guys, I want to tell you about the D6 Family Conference this year. We all need a reset from time to time, and coming out of a crisis requires us to evaluate what changed and what stays the same. The shock, confusion, and stress of disruption often causes leaders to misjudge priorities. At the D6 Family Conference this year, the theme is reset, and they're going to help you do three things. Value the past, look forward, and take the time to properly evaluate your ministry. At the D6 Conference, you will have the opportunity to gather together to plan your discipleship strategy. You'll be equipped and empowered as parents and leaders, and you'll walk away with tools and resources that you will use at your church. Join me and the D6 team April 20th through 22nd in Orlando, Florida, as we come together to take time to reset, refocus, and reconnect as ministry leaders, parents, and volunteers. The D6 Conference is a family ministry conference for your entire team. You can register today and save at d6conference.com. That's d6conference.com. Hey guys, today I welcome author, speaker, and video producer David Morrow. David is the author of several books, including The Map, Why Men Hate Going to Church, and Drowning in Screen Time. David, welcome, man. Thanks so much for hanging out.
Howdy, Carl. Nice to see you again.
Yeah, man. Now, before we kind of dive into some deeper content, tell us a little bit about your experiences in the past. Your day job, or has been your day job, is television producer, right? Give me a little bit of your background.
Yeah, I've been working in the television production business for almost four decades. And that's what informed the writing of Why Men Hate Going to Church, believe it or not, which is my bestseller. I was sitting in church one day and I'm looking at what's going on. And I thought, gosh, if my church was a television show, it would be on the Oprah Network. And, you know, everything about the church was sort of this gentle, feminine, loving, nurturing, tender, meek, sensitive. You know, all the words that described my church were kind of the more feminine words. Yeah. You know, that's what it meant to be a good Christian. And so I went ahead and wrote Why Men Hate Going to Church in 2005, which basically blew up my life. I didn't intend to become a Christian author, But, you know, I'm getting calls from the New York Times, the Washington Post, Chicago Tribune. I'm on NBC Nightly News. Fox News Channel has me on for an interview. It was pretty crazy what happened when that book first came out. And so I've been helping churches work, become more man-friendly over the past 16 years. That doesn't mean, you know, painting an artificial macho veneer on your church.
Yeah.
But just down to the way you minister, the way you spread the gospel. And we've had a lot of successes in a lot of churches. So God's really blessed that work. Wrote Drowning in Screen Time because I'm seeing this huge, you know, uptake in screen time, especially with the pandemic.
Yeah.
But my new the thing God's really shown me now is as we were locked in our homes watching sermons on screen, I put my television producer hat on and I went, oh, my gosh, these sermons are almost unwatchable. And so that's why I'm launching the online preaching coach in 2022. I'm going to be looking for 12 pastors that I can train in the art of on-screen communication so that their sermons are no longer being ignored, which is what most pastors are experiencing.
Yeah. Well, I want to jump back because I looked at your book, Why Men Hate Going to Church, and read some of it. I haven't gotten all the way through it, but I loved how basically it's not a call for men to come to church necessarily. It's a call for the church to go to men, right? You want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. I think a lot of times we think, well, if men would just come to church, everything would be fine. But, you know, men are really stressed and challenged in society as they haven't been in years. Men are losing their traditional roles as protector and provider. Something like 40% of men under 30 still live at home with their parents. Men are failing to launch. And so this whole idea that men just need to step up and, you know, do their duty, that just doesn't wash anymore. You have to be a fisher of men, and you need to put out bait that is going to attract them to the church and convince them of their need for Jesus. And so that's kind of, yeah, we can sit back and say, well, men just need to come back to church. No, I think our churches need to do a better job understanding men, reaching out to men, and providing men opportunities to be men once they come into church.
Yeah. Well, we met a couple months ago now at the Fatherhood Commission, which was a small conference for men and about fatherhood. You shared your vision for the online preaching coach there. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned it a little bit, but yeah, tell me a little bit more. We're going to dive into some of the content that you're going to be covering with that. But tell me who you're after in this 12 pastors and what you're going to be training them to do a little bit more in depth.
Yeah. So I'm looking for 12 pastors who want to contend for the gospel in the attention economy. And now that's a term you may never have heard, but it describes what happens once you post a sermon online. It becomes, let me start by saying that when pastors are trained by seminary to speak in an attention monopoly, people come to a room to hear the pastor speak. No one else speaks. The pastor has the floor. And that's the assumption that underlies most Western preaching, that the pastor has a monopoly. But when you post that sermon online, it becomes a part of the attention economy. And it is now one of just a billion different voices that people can choose from. And pastors never realized how much our attention is drifting during sermons until YouTube came along and told them. And they watched that little number go down, 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 especially at about the 20-minute mark in their sermons.
Right.
And so I think there's a new generation of pastors that are hungry to reach the younger generation that are not wedded to the methods of the past. They don't need their, you know, 45 minutes of pulpit time. They're going to do what it takes to reach the culture for Christ. That's the guy I want. I want to train that guy in how to be interesting and engaging right away, because you've got 30 seconds. If you're scrolling, you've got 3 seconds to get your audience's attention. And so I'm going to teach them techniques that I've learned in the television business. Everything, every TV producer knows that you have just a few seconds to get attention. I'm going to be teaching them how to do that and how to do it without distracting from their core message.
Tell me some of the television experiences that you have, because I want people to know your background and where you're coming from and why, honestly, why they should listen to you.
Yeah, like I said, about four decades in the television production business, many award-winning productions, commercials, specials. I've done about 800 commercials. And when you do a TV spot, you've either got 30 or 60 seconds to get your point across. So I've learned to say a lot in a short amount of time. And, you know, pastors, on the other hand, are taught to say a little in a lot of time because they have to fill, you know, 40 minutes or whatever the preaching slot is. So we just need to untrain pastors in that bad habit of filling time. And, you know, it's not the pastor's fault. It's just the culture of our churches. There's an expectation. Oh, he goes 45 minutes. That's how long we're going to be sitting here. And that's not even to say that every pastor has to shorten his message. You can take your 45 minutes as long as the middle 18 minutes can be snipped out and put online. Then you can still preach, you know, you can preach an hour if you want. So I'm going to be teaching techniques like, you know, how do you do this snip out part in the middle? Maybe you re-preach that just to a camera or something, but we can't keep putting these, you know, 45, 55 minute sermons online, because what people do is they stumble across them. Oh, I'm going to watch a sermon. And then it takes forever to get to the point. And, you know, they're not going to give you 15 minutes to get there. They're going to want to know something right away.
Right. So one thing that was interesting during the height of the pandemic is obviously numbers went crazy through the roof at the start, and then kind of waned, and then went, it was kind of crazy everywhere. And I don't think pastors knew what to make of that. And some of them would chase numbers. You know, what is a Facebook? Do I count Facebook views? How long did they watch? All that kind of stuff. So what's your opinion on viewership online?
No, that's exactly what's happening, Carl. In the wake of the pandemic, pastors were clapping their hands with glee. We had pastors of, you know, churches of 200 who were getting 600 online viewers. Mm-hmm. And they were thinking, this is the best thing since sliced bread. You know, I'm reaching so many people with the gospel. And then as churches began to reopen, we saw the numbers go down to 300 and 200 and 100. And now we're seeing a lot of churches that are getting, you know, 40 and 50 views that used to get 600. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, YouTube, you know, the archive sites where you post a sermon, you know, later, we're seeing 10 and 12 views. Even large churches are just getting a handful of views. And then here's the most disturbing thing is new numbers are just out from Barna and some other research that are finding that in-person attendance for most churches is at 50% of what it was 2 years ago. This is an historic implosion. I can't think of a time in the last 500 years when the church has lost half of its attendees in 700 days. So we are dealing with a huge issue here. We can't sweep it under the rug. It's not going to get back to the way it was. And we've got to figure this online thing out, or we're going to lose a generation that was already headed out the door pre-pandemic.
So what do you tell the discouraged pastor? They're like, well, what happened? What do I do? Maybe feel defeated.
Well, here is the good news. if you are willing to rethink the way you deliver your messages, you can compete with the big boys now. You are on the same stage as Craig Groeschel. You have the same access to them as Stephen Furtick. You have the same opportunity as Andy Stanley to reach an online audience. Because once you get on YouTube, the floor is virtually level. All you have to do is get your shares up. And we're going to talk about the three doors in a minute, but what pastors don't realize is that there are three doors that your sermon has to go through. Why don't you ask me that question, Carl?
Yeah. So, I love these things, and I want to hit on each one. So one is watched, remembered, and shared. Those are the three doors. So let's deal with watched first. So, and then,
yeah.
Well, let me ask you flat out, what are they and why do I need to unlock all three of them?
Okay. So the key to a successful online sermon that reaches people is it has to pass through the three doors. The first one is watched. Obviously, if nobody watches your sermon, it's going to have zero impact. And so if you're seeing watch numbers in the 10, 12, 15, 20 range, your sermon is not going to go anywhere. After having been watched, it has to be remembered. It has to stir the heart. It has to lodge in the brain. This is what Jesus talked about, you know, the seed that falls on good soil. You have to implant your ideas. And this is true whether you're preaching online or in the room. It has to be remembered. Most sermon content is forgotten before people get to the parking lot. That's simply the truth. And then finally, once it's watched and remembered, it has to be shared. And that's, this is where pastors are really untrained right now. They do not know. They have not instructed their people to share the message. And the people don't know how to share that. They never even think about sharing the message. Carl, how many times have you sat in church and the pastor will make some great point and you'll think, oh my gosh, so-and-so needs to hear this. Do you ever feel that?
Mm-hmm.
I feel that all the time. Wow, my daughter needs to hear that. Wow, my friend Benny needs to hear that, right? How can we make it easier to share right in that moment with Benny? Get that message out. These are the tools that I'm going to be teaching in the online preaching coach, because you've got to get it through that third door. Once it gets shared, people share it with their friends, it goes viral, and you get tens of thousands or even hundreds of thousands of views. Have you ever heard of Francis Chan?
I have.
Francis Chan's speaking ministry started with a 3-minute clip of him walking on a balance beam. Before that, he was just a little, nobody knew him preacher in California. He walks across this balance beam and does this illustration. That dang illustration has been shared more than 4 million times. And everybody got a hold of it and started sharing it around. This is the power of online. And because most sermons don't even go through door number one, they never get to door number three, and they don't get shared online. And that's the tragedy that I'm trying to help avert. I want to see more people sharing the gospel by sharing great sermon content.
So I want to drill into the three doors a little bit more. I want to take a step back, because what I thought that you were going to ask me is, if I was sitting in a service, I would never walk out of a service. That would be considered rude. But with online, the attention, which you were mentioning, the attention economy, I can just click away. And so I think that maybe that's definitely a difference between preaching online and preaching to a crowd. Is I'm not going to walk out of your sermon, but I if I'm watching you online, it's not rude for me to click away. I'm by myself.
And Carl, you don't even have to click away. What we're seeing is people with two devices. They're watching online, but they're really not watching online. They picked up their phone, they got a buzz, they're checking their Insta. Mm-hmm. So you have this divided attention. If the sermon is not engaging enough to keep them watching, they may go make themselves a sandwich. I mean, this is a completely new mindset for pastors who were trained in seminary, is you now have to compete. You have to contend for people's attention. And this is not unbiblical. Paul at Mars Hill contended for the attention of his audience. You know, he gathered an audience. The Salvation Army, how did they do it? They brought the brass bands outside. They were widely criticized for that, but they got attention. You remember a guy named Billy Graham,
mm-hmm.
1957, Yankee Stadium. He broadcast a revival meeting. He was relentlessly criticized for getting attention like this. And he was quickly recognized as America's pastor and has led more people to Christ than anyone in the late 20th century. So all these brave men at different times in the church have contended, fought, compete for the attention of a distracted, and we've never had a more distracted public than we have now. So I'm telling pastors, we need to compete, and we can compete. And these are the techniques and tools that I want to teach you.
So with that, as far as, you know, on one device and multiple devices, let me ask you this. And I think we talked about this at the conference, is would you agree that my website needs to be my hub of activity, meaning still stream on YouTube, still stream on Facebook, be on those platforms. But if I'm going to market, I need to send people to firstbaptist.com/live. That way, yeah. I'm not distracted by the cat video on YouTube. Would you agree with that?
There you go. Love those cat videos. Yeah. Guilty.
The Francis Chan balance beam video. I mean,
yeah. No. You do want to drive eyeballs to your website because this is where I kind of differ from a lot of people who are talking about the online space. I'm really not excited about online church as a thing. The reason we need to improve our online preaching is because we need to drive in-person engagement. And here's how it happens. Let's say there's a person who's new to town and they look up your church. And the first thing they're going to do is they're going to go to your website.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to find a sermon, and they're going to click on that sermon, or at least a welcome video. And they're going to see, is this guy a good communicator? That's what they're going to want, because people choose or elect not to go to a church based on the quality of the preaching. I'm sorry. That is the number one consideration. Gallup has proved that. Barna has proved that. 85% of people say that good sermons are the reason they choose a church. So they're going to click on your sermon. They're going to watch your sermon. They may watch two or three sermons. And if those sermons are great, they're going to come in person. And if those sermons are dull, they're going to go find another church or they're going to go watch Netflix. So there's a lot at stake. And this is why we've got to improve our online preaching, is because we want to draw eyeballs to our website and then use that website to drive personal engagement and involvement.
What do you think about our in-person gathering? Do you think that we need to adjust that at all? Maybe break up our sermon into, 10-minute segments? And, are we doing it wrong in person? Do we need to adjust anything?
Well, one thing the research has shown is that we're starting to see a trend towards shorter services in the mega churches. First of all, most of them have dropped the final song. There used to be always be a song after the sermon.
So sermon and then out?
Sermon out. And there's a good reason for that from brain science. When you hear a sermon, if you process it rationally, the arguments that the pastor made, you're using your left brain. Then if you start singing, you're using your right brain and you're basically wiping out everything you learned. So the hymn of response, the song after the sermon was always a bad idea, but now we're realizing that. We saw our numbers on YouTube crater. We've seen people walking out the back of the room. So the
But what about that invitation? What if I want to give an invitation and have place of response?
If you are specifically giving an invitation, I would play instrumental music rather than invite the congregation to sing. Because again, you're moving them to the other side of your brain. If you're giving an invitation, you want them to consider it rationally and emotionally, and you don't want to wipe that out by making them sing lyrics. The other thing I would say is that shorter is always better online, so that anything you can shorten and tighten is going to help you in person as well. I really don't want to get into the mechanics of the service itself. I'm really focused more on the sermon.
Right.
But the general tip, let me just say this. The most shared sermons on the internet are not sermons at all. They're TED Talks. TED Talks are influencing the values of billions of people around the world. And the TED Talkers are our new pastors, believe it or not. They are pastoring. They are discipling people. And the longest TED Talk is 18 minutes. And they are changing the culture. They have, I watched a TED Talk yesterday, 46 million views.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just, my challenge to pastors is, do you want your 40 minutes in the pulpit or do you want to change the world? And are you willing to make the changes necessary to get your message across to the new generation? Because right now, the most popular video, the fastest growing video platform online is TikTok.
Mm-hmm.
And the average video there is 15 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
So it wouldn't hurt to cut it down from 40 to 30 minutes. That's all I'm saying.
And I know that you're focused on the sermon, but should I fill my worship experience with other things to get me to an hour or 90 minutes? Do I want to do more music? I don't think so. And I think that kind of goes back to your why men hate mm-hmm. going to church. And I don't know if I've gotten to this part in the book, but I think 5, 6, 7 songs at the front, I don't think men are singing out loud.
No, too long. Here's the thing. It's funny. The most popular blog post I ever wrote had over 1 million views was why men have stopped singing in church. And it's because they don't know the songs. They don't know the lyrics. The room is dark. It's full of smoke. It's supposed to look like a bar, but it doesn't because there's no beer. It's not a man-friendly environment. So most of the men stand there with their hands in their pockets, and Christians can't sit down during the music now. We're like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. At the sound of the lyre, everyone stands, right?
Right.
So that was an Old Testament reference for you, okay. Biblical scholar.
Right.
Yeah, right. Okay. I would think that the ideal length for corporate worship for me would be 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. Maybe followed up by, stump the pastor. Hey, you got some questions? Q&A. Come on up and let's talk about them. But give people the freedom to leave. more fellowship time. People are desperate to talk to other people. They are not desperate to be talked to over a screen because that's what they do all day at work. So give people what they're desperate for. That's what Jesus did. And I think we could refashion our worship services in such a way that people would be much more engaged. What do you think, Carl?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think shorter is better. I think definitely when we shut down and we all had to go online, I mean, I was preaching that from the hilltops that if you start with three songs and don't get to somewhere faster, you're out. People are gone because they're not going to watch three. They might stand there in person for three songs, but it feels different online. It feels like an eternity singing three songs on your online experience. So, I was saying at the front that we need to, revamp how we do it. Maybe it's one song and then a phone testimonial or things like that, add in stuff, which I still think can be true in your online environment right now. Also, that we can build an online experience for the online audience. And then not have to be, I don't think it needs to be a camera in the back of the room, like a security camera, looking at the thing. I think that we need to build it as an online, but I also get dinged for that because, well, you just want to replace in-person church. No. In fact, I'm probably more in-person church than I am online. It's not that. I just think we need to be excellent in both. If you're going to ask my opinion,
no,
that's my opinion.
I'd rather interview you because you have better ideas. Now, let me tell you that this is just an idea that's forming in my head, but I think this may actually be the solution to giving pastors their 40 minutes of pulpit time, but still making a compelling online sermon. Why not on Wednesday tape the 18 minutes?
Right.
That is what's going to live forever online. And then, pastor, you get up into the pulpit, you do your little intro, welcome the ladies that went to the ladies' retreat, and you set up your sermon in person. And then you roll the thing, and then you come back and you say, now, if you want to accept Jesus, come on up, But roll the middle as video and do it well. Do it with a teleprompter, I am just a huge one for object lessons. I share that passion with Jesus. Jesus was really big into object lessons, and I don't know why we have discounted that, but it's so important to show things. You're in a visual medium now when you're online. It's called television for a reason. So it's just so important to bring those visual elements in if you're going to engage people both online and in the room.
I agree. All right, Hal, I'm going to hit you with a couple of random questions, and then I want to hit you with some devil's advocate kind of stuff.
All right.
I'm going to dive back into your watched, remembered, and shared, your three doors. So how long should my first hook be? If I have a first illustration, how long should that be?
It should go the entire sermon. This is one of the tragic things I see. Sometimes I've worked with pastors and I've said, you need to start your sermon with a hook in the first few seconds. It needs to be either a compelling visual, a great illustration, or an actual object that you bring into the pulpit. But then the mistake they make is they're on this horse, they're riding toward victory, and they jump off the horse.
Right.
And then they never go back to their opening illustration. A smart pastor will ride that horse all the way to the finish line. So if you're...
Comedians call that a callback, right?
Yes, that's called a callback.
Right. So if you called back multiple times, then I think that makes it more shareable and memorable. Go ahead.
90, you'll do 90% better. For instance, I'm just going to use my coffee cup here as an example. Okay. If you're preaching Matthew 23, Jesus said, clean the inside of the cup, right? Mm-hmm. You start your sermon off by saying, my coffee is tasting worse and worse every day. I don't know why. I keep cleaning the cup and it's just every day. Oh my gosh, it's full of mold. Yuck. Oh, I need to clean the inside of the cup. Jesus talked about this in Matthew 23. Pray with me. You pray, you do a transition, and then you go right back into the message. You're talking about the difference between a clean life inside versus imposing rules from outside, which is what the Pharisees did. And now you've got a beautifully set up talk about legalism, but you take that cup and that cup is in your hand the whole time. You're putting it down, you're picking it up. You're constantly referring to the cup. You put the cup on the screen, you put legalism on the left, you put liberalism on the right. And you talk about how both of these philosophies are just cleaning the outside of the cup. You want to hear that sermon, Carl?
Yeah, that was great. Yep.
Yeah, I'm going to be doing some sample sermons. That's one of them.
Yep. I just clipped that out and I'm going to be sharing it. Just so you know.
It is. See? So this is what I'm going to be teaching pastors is how to ride the horse all the way to the finish line. And I think that horse will really influence people for Christ because we've just got to start getting these sermons shared online instead of letting them die on YouTube.
How important is my title?
The title is super important. And because we live in the age of search engines, and so when we title a sermon, if we've titled it something people are actually looking for, they're more likely to find it. For example, you could do a sermon on 1 Corinthians 13. Now, you could title that sermon 1 Corinthians 13. And when the people who are out searching for 1 Corinthians 13, who are they? Seminarians, mm-hmm. pastors, right? You're going to get nobody. Right. But if you titled that sermon, "What is Real Love? How Can I Be Loved?" Now you're titling it something that people actually look for on Google. In fact, people who are in turmoil, who are questioning their values, type in that term. Mm-hmm. And so if you name your sermon, "What is Real Love? Why am I not being loved? Why are people so unloving?" your chances of being discovered by a non-Christian or a person who really needs to know Jesus increase by 1,000%. So your title, your sermon titles, your series titles, you really need to think those through and you need to make them search engine friendly so that your online sermons become little evangelists that are out there working for you 24/7.
And YouTube is a search engine. The second, what is it? The second top after Google search engine. All right. Rapid fire for you. Let's talk about some reservations. So I'm going to play devil's advocate for you. Okay. Do I need to turn my worship service into a TV show? You talked about recording it. Do I have to have some big, huge production?
No, you need a good camera and a good mic, and you can do it with one camera.
Yep. Do I need a completely different teaching style? You're telling me to now teach in front of a camera. I'm not used to that. I need people in front of me.
You don't necessarily need a completely different teaching style, but if you really want to contend and fight hard for the unchurched, you are going to have to change some things.
Do I need to become an entertainer? Do I need to become a comedian? I need to keep people's attention, right? So I need to constantly entertain.
You do not need to entertain, but you do need to engage, and the two are different.
How are they different?
Entertainment would be focused on solely, well, you've heard the logos, pathos, ethos, the three, pillars of rhetoric from Aristotle. The entertainer works almost completely in pathos. He's not conveying information. He's simply entertaining. He's in the emotional realm. A lot of pastors are just all logos. They just want to get up there and here's a verse. Here's what it means. Here's a verse. Here's what it means. Here's a verse. Here's what it means. Let's pray. I've done my job. You have to learn to function. You have to learn to distribute information within an emotional framework that begins at the very beginning of your message. This is your emotional framework. Everybody can relate to a cup of coffee, that sort of thing. So that's sort of a long answer to a rapid fire question, but no, you don't have to completely change your style, but you do need to learn to harness the power of emotion when you are becoming factual. You don't need to be an entertainer.
But you don't understand. I'm a pastor. I like taking the Bible and preaching the Bible. So are you're asking me to water down doctrine, to be more seeker friendly? That's not me. I need to preach the word.
You do need to preach the word. And I would challenge that. I would say that Jesus certainly didn't water down anything, but he also knew how to get attention for his messages and to use object lessons, to build messages, to build dramatic tension. He knew all these things. So, I'm not doing anything that Jesus didn't already do.
Good. I need a huge tech team for that. That sounds like I have to hire a bunch of staff members.
Well, the better the gear, the better. But again, one camera with a good microphone is all you need to do really good online preaching.
This sounds like a whole lot. I don't really have time for this and what I'm doing. I'm already doing so much. You're asking me to do more. I don't really have time for this.
Well, first of all, I've just shortened your sermon to 18 minutes. So you need to do half as much research. It's a discernment process, Carl. When you go, Pastor, when you go into your study and you prepare for your sermon, are you on your face before God asking him, folks are asking him, Lord, what's the one thing my folks need to hear? And once you've identified that one thing, build your sermon around that one thing. Pastors tend to tell everything they know. Oh, here's an interesting fact about the Corinthians. Let me just drop that in there. Well, does it bring them to, well, no, it doesn't really, but it's so interesting to me. You know, this is where pastors.
And you could do that, but do it later, like a deeper study or a 1 minute clip on that fact on Corinthians, right?
See, now you're ringing my bell too, because right. Another thing that I'm really high on is this idea that if you're going to preach 18 minutes on Sunday, you've got a lot of other good material. Why don't you distribute that Monday through Thursday in email or on your app? If you don't have an app, just send out an email, 1 minute clips with a suggested Bible reading. Guess what? You're feeding your flock every day now, and you're going back and reinforcing the message that you had on Sunday. Yeah. So your little 1 minute clip says, hey, you know, Sunday we talked about the love, you know, is there real love? Or we talked about the cup. One thing I didn't get to say is blah, 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 blah. Now, if you would end this by reading 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verses 4 and 5, and here's the question I have for you this Monday. What's one way I can be more loving to someone else? I'll see you tomorrow. Check your email tomorrow morning. If we did this every day, we could recreate Acts chapter 2, where they met in the temple courts daily for the apostles' teaching. We have electronic means now that will allow us to meet daily. Why are we not using this?
All right, so let's land on something that we kind of talked about early on, and that is our joint agreement that online church should not replace in-person church, that we should coexist together, that both should be excellent, and that online church really is the welcome center to get them into an in-person gathering. So let's end here, and let me just ask you flat out, how do the two coexist? How do we do both well?
Well, I really do believe that what you said is that online church is the new welcome center. People are going to check you out online before they come in person. You know, that like Carrie Nyhoff said, when was the last time you bought a product without checking it out online first? You just don't do that. You don't take a vacation without checking it online first. And people are certainly not going to venture into your church. You know, 20 years ago, people just wandered into church. That doesn't happen anymore. So how do they coexist? They coexist in that your online preaching becomes the front door to your personal engagement. And we simply cannot ignore that front door anymore. We have to fling that door wide open so that more people can know Jesus. And I think I'll just leave it at that.
Do I need to beat people over the head? Like, say if I'm in person and I'm talking to the live stream, you people need to be here. Like, this is where the church is. You people need to be here. Does that work?
Well, I think you can. You and I are in agreement on that one. Beating people over the head never really did work very well. If you see people on the live stream, be encouraging and right. You know, talk to them about how great it is to be in church and to see your friends, and you know, dangle a steak in front of them, and those who are hungry will take a bite.
Good. Well, man, if I want to be one of the 12 or keep up with you, how do I do that?
Well, I'm building my web stuff should be ready. My web invitation, the landing page and everything. Hopefully, Lord Jesus, help me get it done by mid-February of 2022. You can always drop me an email at david@davidmurrow.com. And I can kind of give you a little preview before the landing page is ready. If you go to davidmurrow.com and click on coaching, then you'll be able to see the videos. There's also, I'm really excited about this. I'm going to put a free video series, training series called The 9 Commandments of Great Online Preaching at that URL. So it's going to be one of those typical things. All you got to do is give me your email address so that I can bother you with emails later on. And you get to watch this. It's probably going to be about a 40-minute course. And I'm going to go into detail, 9 different things that you can do this Sunday to make your church, make your online service work and resonate.
Do you have the URL yet?
It's going to be at davidmurrow.com.
Okay.
But I'll be spraying that out over social media and stuff, targeting pastors and stuff. You know, honestly, I don't think I'm going to have any trouble finding 12 pastors who want to give this a try. You are going to have to pay for it. It's not going to be free because we've learned that free things don't really go over that well. So I want you to have some skin in the game, but you're going to, I mean, dude, you're going to have my phone number. This is going to be really intense personal coaching. Yeah. And it's not just, hey, watch a bunch of canned videos. I'm going to be meeting with guys every week and watching their sermons and working with them on their delivery. And, you know, the goal is that by fall, we've got a cadre of 12 pastors who are absolutely killing it online and who are growing a physical church through great online preaching.
Good. Well, I want people to know, if they are not one of the 12, to continue to follow you, get your books, and check out the free teaching and all that. Well, man, pleasure getting to know you. And thank you so much for the time. This is great insight. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. And if I ever get a podcast going, you're going to be my first guest because you, you're kind of an interesting dude. I mean, I enjoyed meeting you and you're a good interviewer. So thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Thanks.
Hey guys, Carl here with a church media tip. Gently encourage your leaders to not make any last minute changes. In my experience, very last minute changes often affect the concentration of the team and can throw your execution game off. Train your leaders that about 20 minutes before the service starts is the cutoff point to add anything to the presentation unless it's extremely urgent. Find a time, not on Sunday, to sit down with them and explain to them how it throws the team off and that what you desire is excellence. Now, does this mean that a last minute change will never happen or that you don't need to adapt in the moment? No. As far as you're concerned, be flexible. Be a servant. Don't bash your leaders in front of your team. Always serve the best way you can. So both are true. You should be flexible, and also you should help your leaders understand the importance of setting your production team up for success.
The show notes for this episode are available now at MakingSundayHappen.com.
Well, hey guys, thanks so much for hanging out this week. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel for all the latest content. You can just search 1230 Media or Making Sunday Happen on YouTube to find us. And I want to thank the D6 Family Conference for sponsoring our show this week. Be sure to register your family ministry team for that event this year, April 20th through 22nd in Orlando. You can get all the information at d6conference.com. Well, next week, I'll welcome Grant Norsworthy back to the show. Grant is a worship leader and artist in New Zealand. I've had Grant on before to talk about virtual choir videos, and this time we're going to be talking about how worship is more than just music. He'll give some great encouragement on how we can use our language and our posture a little different when it comes to talking about worship. Well, Grant Norsworthy will be on next week. And in 2 weeks on the show, I'll welcome my good friend Yancey. Yancey just released a brand new book called Sweet Sound about the power of discipleship through worship. She'll be on the show in 2 weeks. Well, go out there, guys, and create some incredible worship experiences this weekend. I'll catch you next week.
Making Sunday Happen is a production of the Ministry of 1230 Media. For show notes, archive episodes, and more free resources for your church, visit MakingSundayHappen.com.